clear your head, do this and do that. It's like practicing penalties in training. It's pointless because you can't replicate the pressure. You can't replicate that you've just played 90 minutes. The adrenaline, the nerves, how tired you are. There's £150 million on the game. We haven't been in the Premier League for 16 years. You're taking it in front of the Blues fans. So the enormity of it...
That's all from...
That's all going through... Now, if anyone can just cut... Now, listen, if you're Ronaldo or Messi, you're probably a... Paul Devlin can't. So, yeah, all that's going through my mind is, oh, God, if I miss this. So all the negative thoughts are going through. But then, like, you get to it and like
when
I say...
hits the net, then you slot.
Yeah, like, I get there and I think, right, okay. And my process, I always had a run-up a little bit to the left. Always had a decent run-up. 90% of my penalties went to my left, the keeper's right. It was the strike that beat them because I used to hit
sort
it with...
across the ball instead of trying to open up.
And it was just, right, okay, I know you're knackered. Just concentrate on doing those things. And luckily enough, it went in. Mm. Next season was I was going into the last year of my contract. And I'd scored about 8 in the first 16 or 17 of that season. And then we come to Loggerheads a little bit with the contract. And I just found myself out the team. And it was difficult. It was really difficult. You know, I got a bit of stick off the fans. I remember coming back here. I think it was two years in a row, Boxing Day, New Year's Day, playing out there. And having the whole of the stadium, Devlin is a wanker, there's only one greedy bastard and all that. So,
like, that was one of the things on here. You've just been voted into the squad for the best team ever.
Yeah, yeah.
As voted for by Blues fans,
haven't you? But you know what? I think if you look, older people don't use apps today. I mean, you look at some of the ones that then made it. Frank Worthington, Tony Colton, fucking Arthur, Archie Gemmell, Colin Todd, people like that. So, you take...
No context to it.
Yeah, I mean, I looked at the five that were shortlisted for right midfield. Like, Gordon Ashley, not many people probably ever fucking heard of him. Like, 60-odd goals in 200-and-something games, you know. But, I mean, listen, Larson was a good player. And it was funny because I was looking, there was a lot of similarities. I mean, it was near... My best season here was 96-97, where I was top scorer, player of the year, and I got goal of the season. Larson done that in... Well, he wasn't top scorer, I don't think, but he got player of the year, goal of the season in 2007. So virtually 10 years, obviously the playoff team for me, the cup final team with him.
Yeah.
Well, I will say, though, if you look at my goal per game ratio, it was the best out of all five. Mine was one in... Gordon Ashley was one in four. Mine was one in 3.6, 3.7.
So what you're saying is the fans are wrong. That's putting you in the first 11.
Yes, I'm fucking devastated. That is a good...
But again, unpopular opinion, Jude being in there, it's mad, isn't it? But the people who have got the romance and the younger people assuming for Real Madrid now...
What was it? 33 games, 6 goals, Christoph. How does he get in front of Bob Latchford?
Well, I was just watching the highlights
of
the West Brom game. The season we beat him. And it was, oh, Dougherty's still looking for his first goal. And other than that glut of games, weren't it? Where you just like, why?
He was, listen. There's a myth that he kept us up that season. And I've said it for... however many years, a load of bollocks. We'd have stopped up comfortable without Chris, because we had that season where we stopped up comfortable, we beat the Villa twice. He was the cherry on the cake, Christoph.
Yeah, that's Southampton game.
Yeah, but like he had two or three. I mean, listen, he was fucking brilliant. Don't get me wrong, I'm not one of the best players, if not the best player I've ever played with. But we would have stopped up that season comfortable without Christoph. Mm. And if you look at the goals he scored against, who did he score against?
That's Charlton as well. Charlton, yeah. Southampton.
There's someone else as well.
Middlesbrough. So they weren't like top. It weren't a case of them goals in them three games kept us up by the skin of our teeth.
Yeah.
You know, and I think fucking West Ham went down with 42 points that year, didn't they? Which you're stopping up comfortable with that. At least he was a brilliant player, but, you know, I look back and fucking think.
What would be your 11 then?
Oh, it's hard, then. It's fucking...
But again, it's subjective to how old you are, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like you just said, then.
See, I'm...
So,
I'm
people over 60, but I wouldn't put Francis in, because I've never seen him play.
Well, no, I've never seen Trevor play. I played him in training. He was fucking brilliant in training. But, like, my era down here was, like, Mick Harford, Tony Colton, Frank Worthington, people like that. So, you could probably line 100 people up and have 100 different 11s, couldn't you?
Yeah.
So, I think it's hard, then. I think it's a really hard thing to... I just think that when they do it on an app... It favours people that you fucking... How many people out there don't use an app? Do you know what I mean?
It's just a postcard one as well, shouldn't they?
it's hard.
It gets debate going, doesn't it? Especially on social media.
That's what I do. I'll type me in the squad, but you know, I don't put too much credit on it when I look at the ones that end in the fucking squad. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
A great thing to be. I mean, listen, I never thought I'd be playing out there. There was more missus was on about the other day. So I've got The top 10 goals of all time, I've got two in the top, probably the top eight, 16 seconds and 38 seconds. So I was the third most prolific penalty scorer in the club's history. First ever Premiership goal, player of the season, top. So like, I look back and think, fuck me. You know, although I weren't at a club that was winning things, you know, I've got some really good achievements that I'll be proud of forever out there. And thinking I never thought I'd play out there. I mean, one of them, innit?
You're one of my favourite players, but I think I feel like you're underrated a little bit. Do you feel like you're underrated?
I think what it is, because I wasn't a spectacular player. Like, I didn't have a trick. I wasn't really
a
set piece special. I had a bit of pace, and I think the one thing I had for a winger that wingers don't normally have, I liked the physical side of it. You couldn't kick me out of game, where most wingers you can boot them out of game. Yeah. You know, I was quick, I was direct, and I could nick a goal. You know, I wasn't the most pleasing on the eye at times, but I would imagine you wouldn't have wanted to play against me if I was, you know, on my game.
The left back looking at the team, so thinking, yeah, I've got a grasp to that.
Yeah, you know, but it is what it is. I think my record here was 38 goals in 139 games in all competitions. Don't get me wrong, some of the times I played down the middle, because I could play down the middle as well. Yeah. You know, I probably played 85-90% of my career out wide. If ever they needed me to go down the middle, I could play down there as well. I think obviously the non-league background with that determination, that getting stuck in, because from 16, 17, I was playing with blokes. I weren't playing against other 16, 17. I was playing non-league against blokes.
Yeah.
And I think that brings you on a lot quicker than from the age of 8 up to 21, 22, you're playing against people your own age. And I don't think that brings you up. Go on a Tuesday night away to Altrincham where you've got a 32-year-old who's going to fucking elbow you.
He's got no pace. I always remember
as well, and somebody met, I think it was fucking Merson, mentioned this on a podcast I seen the other day. Like, years ago, the defender was allowed, what, right, you've had your one. So they were allowed to fucking boot you once and get away with it.
So that, I mean, one could be like...
Yeah, you're coming up against Stuart Pearce or people like that. You knew he was allowed to fucking smash you once and the ref would go, right, you've had your one now. Fucking no good if you're fucking ugly enough, is it? But that was commonplace, right? You've had your one. I mean, I made my debut in 92. The amount of times that you'd fucking get smashed from behind or whatever and the referee had let it out. Fucking hell, it'd be going to nick for some of the tackles now. They're just the way it was, really.
Yeah. That takes us nicely then into...
have you started?
just rolling with it, yeah. Hi, Paul, how are you, mate?
Morning, mate.
I didn't know you'd start.
No.
Tell me when you're going to
roll in.
He doesn't like doing introductions, so we start on it.
Be careful what I fucking
say. No, nothing, yeah. We'll take the bit out where you run about the bank.
I can't believe you're really a Villa fan.
The bank robbery and stuff.
Right, so talk about your non-league start. How did it begin football for you? As a youngster?
I mean, I always played at school. Always loved football. My dad's from Scotland, so I was a big Celtic fan. So, and then my uncle used to take me down to Blues, so it was always coming down to watch the Blues and seeing how Celtic are getting on. But yeah, played football at school. You know, didn't really stand out. And when I was at senior school, there was a lot of industrial action over the 5 years I was at senior school. So we only really had a team the first and the last year.
What school did you go to?
Perry Common. Didn't play a great deal of football. When I left school, wanted to be a chef, so got a YTS as a chef at the Post House Hotel in Great Bar. And obviously used to work weekends, used to work nights. I didn't really play football. And it was only when I got to sort of 17, maybe going on 18, drifted back into Sunday football with St Mary's and John Celtic. A dear friend of mine, Joe Brennan, started up a team. But because I couldn't play every week and I wasn't training, I'd be on the bench all the time. And we got to a cup final in Tamworth and I came on for the last 20 minutes. In a cup final over there, which we won. And the Tamworth youth team scout, Paul Wood, was there. And he said, oh, I like what I said. Will you come and try out for Tamworth youth team? Wednesday night league then, and I did. And that went well. And then within 2 years, I'd made my debut in the old first division, the top flight. So it was broke into Tamworth's first team. Did a bit of a tour around the non-league clubs in Birmingham. Ended up at a club called Armitage 90 in 1990. And Stafford Rangers, who were in the conference then under Chris Yurott, bought me for $2,000. And I had just over a season there. And then
they had a good team back then, didn't they?
Yeah, Colin Moore was there. Yeah. Fraser Wood, Wayne Simpson, Stevie Essig. Some real good, you know, top level non-league players.
Is it true they turned $100,000 down from Liverpool for you?
No, listen, I don't really know the ins and outs of it. I was up there for 6 weeks on and off, played in a couple of reserve games. Actually played up front. One of my claims to fame, played in a reserve game at the Albion and it was Ian Rush's comeback game from an Achilles injury. There was about 7,000 people there to watch, obviously, Rush. And we won 1-0 and I scored the goal. So always say I was his best strike partner, Rossi, better than Douglas. But no, that was great. But I was up there for 6 weeks on and off, and there was rumours that they wanted to buy me. I think they put in like a 10 or 20 grand bid, and Stafford turned it down because the season before they'd sold Stan for 100 grand, which was a record for a non-league teenager back then. And I think they were asking for, you know, a quarter, a few quid, and Liverpool just went no. Ended up going for trial at a couple of places. Went to Leeds. Wilkinson really liked me and wanted me to go back. I hated it up there. I just didn't like it. And I was up there for 1 week and come back, and Warnock had been after me for a while. And I come back and said, I don't like it up in Leeds. I went, signed for Notts County. So I went and signed for Notts County. Great move that. Notts County got relegated. Leeds won the league. No, listen, I'd have probably gone to Leeds and never kicked a ball. They had a great team, McAllister.
Any of them down here sniffing about at the time?
No.
No,
I was... A mate of mine's quite friendly with Gary Pendry, and he says that the Blues scout had been to watch me a few times. He went, no, he's not good enough. I don't know who the scout was. I'd like to remember his name. I'd like to tell you. But, yeah, there was a few. Derby, Oxford. I just really liked Neil Warnock. Obviously, it was the old First Division top flight at the time. Nottingham, you know, it's only down the road. So that appealed to me. But I remember being in the house on the Monday where I didn't go back to Leeds, and Howard Wilkinson, I was living at home, rang the number and give me a right rollicking down the phone.
On the iPhone?
Yeah, because he wanted me to, yeah, on the phone. He had to dial up with a call, give me a right rollicking down the phone. But it worked out right. You know, I ended up going and playing 150-odd games for Notts County. And it was a brilliant start. Obviously, Neil Warnock gave him a chance, but then Mick Walker came in, and Mick was brilliant for younger players. Michael Johnson and people like that were, you know, we were all there. So it was a great start to have at Notts County.
Did you win the Anglo-Italian?
We did, mate. We was the only English team to win it when it came back. Again, that was brilliant. I played at Wembley twice in two cup finals in the Anglo-Italian. You know, not many players can say, well, I've played in the cup final at Wembley. And we lost to Brescia the first year when they had like George Hadji playing, you know, top player, wow. Unbelievable player, Hadji. And then we beat Ascoli the next year, and they had Oliver Bierhoff playing up front, who went on to win the World Cup. And we had some trips to it, you know.
He's getting assists in knockout,
sorry. Yeah. Set up Big Devon White, thunderous header, Big Devon. Leggy set up Tony Agana with a throw that went about 180 yards from the halfway line to the back post.
We've touched upon that, yeah. Sometimes it went broke when you come to Blues, and Leggy was there again, you're like, come on.
Do you know what? I've never seen anyone. I mean, and Leggy never used to practice it. So obviously, I played with Leggy at Notts County. Me and Jono, and Leggy used to share a house. So we were all, even to this day, we're all really close. I don't think I ever seen him practice it once. You never see Leggy in the gym working out. He's like that, any Leggy. He just had this throw where he could throw it. And what Leggy could do is, he could throw it like that. It wasn't like a big looper. Yeah. It was like a rocket. Yeah, I mean, I think the Tony Garner's goal in that game at Wembley, he's near enough on the halfway line and throws it to the back stick at Wembley, and Tony nips in and gets a touch. But yeah, it was a great weapon to have.
Before his time, I know, because it's come back now.
What's your wife in this day, in this economy?
Do you know what? I feel sorry for him, though, because he's Andy Legg, and people always think they're throwing, but Legg was a good player, played for Wales. Yeah. You know, he had a great left foot, great engine, could nick a goal. So the first thing people think of when you say Legg, that's him with the massive throwing. But
there's worse things to be known for.
Well, yeah, well, listen, at least you know for something. Yeah, exactly. Leggy was a good player. He was a really good player.
So it's quite nice that you've got that memory of the Anglo-Italian, rather than most Blues fans that just remember it for a...
Well, I remember speaking to Jono after the Ancona game. We'd actually gone somewhere and we were having a game of paintball or laser tag or something like that, and we sat down. And it weren't long after the Ancona thing. Obviously, I wasn't here at the time. And he was really worried.
God help us if he was there, though, as well. Imagine if he was in that mix.
I'd still be there now, but I'd be in Nick. I'd be in Nick still. But he was just saying, and he was genuinely worried. And I always remember him making me laugh. He went, Dev, with my arse, if I go back there as well, he said, they'll have a field day. But,
beautiful man.
Because we used to say, we're going to lads' holiday. Fancy Italy. No, Lord. You wouldn't have got him going to Italy for all the money in the world. But, yeah, I mean, obviously I've spoke to a few of the lads that were involved with that. I think Daishi was the man that done the main damage, if I'm reading between the lines.
Yeah. He's not even lad. But that was an Italian restaurant these days, though.
That was the only thing with that. And I always found it a bit strange. The games in England, you'd have Italian refs. And the games in Italy, you'd have English refs. Now, how you were allowed to tackle in that here is a lot different over there. So you used to get that many sendings off, and that, I think I got sent off two or three times in it. But yeah, I mean, what's acceptable to them
yeah.
and us was two different things.
Mm.
But
yeah.
Wembley winners medal out of it, mate.
That's it. So coming back to Blues then, 96.
Yeah.
What was that like? I know you're watching the highlights earlier. What was your first game?
I think it was about my second or third game.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was brilliant.
Instead off camera, you just love playing against Wolves, didn't you?
Yeah, I mean, I probably scored more goals against Wolves throughout my career than any other team. I just seemed to always do well against the Wolves. But no, obviously, Jono had came over to Blues. So, you know, I was gutted. Me, Jono and Leggy was really close, and he came to Blues. And then I just got a phone call off him one day. He said that the gaffer, Baz, he said, he fancies you. What do you think? Well, didn't need to say anything, did he? Yeah, get me here. So I know there's a bit of to-ing and fro-ing with Notts County, with Baz and Steve Thompson and Colin Murphy, who were managers at the time. And then me and Leggy both ended up coming in the same deal.
So was that like one of Barry's like negotiations? Or who else was in your house?
The rumour I heard is that Stafford Rangers had a sell-on clause for whatever I went for. So I think the deal was $400,000 or $500,000 for me and Leggy, and I was valued at about $80,000, and Leggy was $420,000. So I don't know. I think there might have been a little bit of, what did I call it? You know,
get one free.
Yeah, a little bit of constructive bookwork going on there. But no, it was great, you know, to get the chance to come and play, which I never thought I'd do. And I think my first game was Sheffield, which we lost. I think my second game, the Wolves game was second or third game, but I remember saying to Baz, we played Sunderland, and about 2 or 3 weeks before that, I played Sunderland for Notts County, scored two great goals, 1-3-2, and there a Welsh centre-half there called Andy Melville, and I'd done really well against him and murdered him that day. So I'm never forgetting, the changing rooms were over there at the time, so he's read the team out, and I've made the mistake of saying, oh, great, I had a really good game against him a few weeks ago, brilliant, lose 1-0, Melville goal. So like, you can imagine the stick I've got off Baz. But I mean, the thing that got me off to a flyer here was that Wolves game. I think it was a Monday night or a Tuesday night. It was a sellout at St Andrews, and we won 2-0, and I got both the goals. And one of the things that Baz did bring me in for as well, it was at the time where Blues were really struggling with penalties.
Yeah,
you know, you wouldn't believe that somebody had taken into consideration how you take a penalty, and we got a penalty that night, which I scored, and then I scored the second one. And I was looking at it the other day, the pitch. If you look at the pitch during that game, you know, you can't believe how what it's like now.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I got off to a good start, and I think I scored about 7 or 8 in 15, 16 games. And unfortunately, Baz got the tin tack then. But it got me off to a really, really good start down there.
What's your thoughts on Baz?
Brilliant.
When he got in contact, and have you seen the furore of the players he was signing, and obviously being where he'd been, did you just like, yeah, I want
to... Well, I mean, listen, it could have been Baz, it could have been anyone. As soon as I knew it was Blues, you know, I was coming. But Baz was brilliant, proper football man, you know, great person to play for. And again, you know, we touched off camera earlier about the role that Karen Brady, David Sullivan, David Gall had in rebuilding the club. And Baz was a massive part of that as well. You know, he was huge. And I don't know, with the exception of Alex Ferguson, another manager that has been left the club so long that gets a reception like Baz does here. Fergie would get that at Man U, Baz gets that here. And I think, you know, when we went to Wembley last year and Peterborough beat us, I think a lot of people sort of go, well, we're glad it's gone to Lord Baz.
Yeah,
sort,
if anyone's going to beat us.
Yeah, if anyone's beat us, you know, we want it to be Baz involved. But Baz was brilliant, proper character.
How difficult was it then under Francis finding time on the pitch limited and that relationship? Because obviously there was a lot of press written about it at the time. Mm. You didn't really see eye to eye, did you?
No, Trevor came in and obviously... the club's best ever player but by a million miles, and you know, big for all when he came in. Trevor's coming home, so obviously I think when a new manager comes in, not just Trevor, everywhere they want to bring in their own players. And I think there was only really me and Grange sort of survived from the Barry Fryer, but you know, I wanted him to come in and him to love me and, you know, get on great. We didn't get on, but personally that first year under Trevor was my best ever season. You know, I scored 19 goals, I was club's player of the year, I was top scorer, I got goal of the season away at QPR. So it couldn't have gone any better. But I always got the impression that, because we bought in some big hitters, you know, Newley, Furs, Gary Ablett, Barry Orme, Bruce Lee. Yeah. You know, I bought in some big names, really, for where the club was at the time. And then I think next season was I was going into the last year of my contract, and I'd scored about 8 in the first 16 or 17 of that season. And then we come to loggerheads a little bit with the contract, and I just found myself out the team. And it was difficult. It was really difficult. You know, I got a bit of stick off the fans. I remember coming back here. I think it was two Boxing Day, two years in a row, Boxing Day, New Year's Day, playing out there, and having the whole of the stadium, Devlin is a wanker, there's only one greedy bastard and all that. So got a bit of stick. And,
you're quite upset at the time, because obviously that comes out from the club, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And you're having to play for the club, yeah. And then obviously that's the happening behind your back.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, because people didn't really know what had gone on. You know, Trevor was offering me a contract which was nowhere near what the guys he was bringing in was in. And I'd say, well, listen, just get me on parity with Paul Furlong.
Oh, bang it, but, as well.
Yeah, 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 you know. And it was, well, no, they've come from Chelsea, they've come from Blackburn, whatever it was.
Couldn't get them off the physio's treatment table over at the time.
Well, that's nothing against the lads that come in. No. Furs was a great lad. And but I'm thinking, well, yeah, but they're at Blues now. And I'm doing as well, if not better than them. I just wanted a little bit of parity, and he didn't want it. But I always got the impression he didn't really fancy me as a player anyway. And I think the fact that I'd done so well in the first season, he couldn't really not play me. But then, you know,
it's all through gritty teeth, you're on the
team. Yeah, I think so. And, you know, we had a bit of a fallout, and it was well documented. But it was nice years down the line to, you know, I bumped into him a couple of times when he was manager of Palace, and then at the training ground, and we sat down and had a coffee, and we put it to bed. Because that happens, you know.
Yeah.
Managers come in at every club, and they want their own players in. But it was just gutting for me, because I wanted to have 10 years here and score 100 goals. And I think I could have done that if I hadn't have had those 4 years away at Sheffield U. But again, it was great to get the chance to come back as well.
Yeah. And then so up to Sheffield United. So was Warnock in charge at that time?
No, funnily enough, it was Steve Thompson who'd sold me from Notts County to here.
Yeah.
So I went back under Tomo. Tomo got the sack at the end of that season. We had a few managers. We had like Russell Slade, Adrian Heath coming for a little bit. It was at the time where post Howard Kendall, where Howard Kendall had gone in there, signed a load of players on big money in an attempt to get the club up. I mean, when I went there, Ian Rush was there, Paul McGrath was there, Dean Saunders was there, Graham Stewart was there, David White was there, Michael Vunk was there. Some big hitters on big wages.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't quite get there. And obviously Howard went, and the club financially was struggling, so they had to sweep the decks. So Tomo brought me in, and I think... I think that season we got to the playoffs. Sunderland beat us in the semi-final of the playoffs. But then obviously after that, you know, Neil Warnock came in again, who I'd known from Notts County. It was brilliant. His first season, I was player of the year, did really well and really enjoyed it. Under, you know, Neil's a massive Sheffield United fan anyway. But yeah, I ended up having 4 really good years there, and, you know, thoroughly enjoyed my time up there.
Can we just touch on the situation that brought you back again that we talked about off camera?
Go on.
No, in regards to Bruce,
yeah,
and how that move came about.
Yeah, I was told there was a little bit of interest from Steve, who obviously had a good relationship with Steve. I'd played with him down here. His first job as a manager was Sheffield U. I was at Sheffield U, so that, you know, I knew him really well. He knew me really well. There was rumours that he wanted me to go down to Palace, so I ended a transfer request in at Sheffield United, which went down like a lead balloon because I was only like a few months into a 4-year deal. Then obviously, Steve gets off a disc job, gets put on gardening leave, but it's sort of relayed back to me, don't worry, once he gets the Blues job, you're coming back. I thought, oh, great, back to Blues. And went on for a while, heard nothing. Eventually gets the job, so I'm like, happy days, get the bags.
You're
back.
Still playing because
I'd had the chat with Warnock. Obviously, it had gone down like a lead balloon up there that I'd put a transfer request in. And Warnock was brilliant. He just went, listen, stay at home, train at home, keep self ticking over. He didn't try and punish me, make me train with the kids or anything like that. He was brilliant. He said, if you're anything, give me a bell. And so anyway, he got the job. I'm waiting a couple of weeks, heard nothing. So I've rang Jono. I've gone, Jono, what's happening with the gaffer? And Jono, you could tell Jono didn't really want to say anything down the phone. He went, Devi said, listen, the gaffer's had a look at it. There's a lot of like 30-plus-year-olds in the squad. He doesn't think it'd be wise to bring you. I was like 29, so I'm devastated then at the time. And I think, oh, God. So I went to Neil Warnock, told him exactly what happened. He went, okay, Sam, you're back in the squad. And he put me straight back in the team. And I never
think... They doing well at the time when you were on the leave? Or could they have done with you?
I think they were doing okay. You know, it would have been top half.
He weren't cutting his nose off to spite his face in a certain way.
He was... if you were straight with Neil and you did well with for him, which I did, he was brilliant with you. If you mugged him off, he would make your life a misery, which is like most managers do. And I think he didn't really want me around the training ground with my arse in my hands in a mood because he know I'd boot a few in training. So I think it was a safer option for him to have me in Birmingham than up training in Sheffield. So we were playing, I think it was a Sunday Sky game, playing Norwich away. They put me straight back in the team. We won, done well. So got back on the bus. It was bizarre, really. And then I'm on the bus travelling back from Norwich and he calls me up to the front. He says, make sure you take all your boots and your pads, but you're going to Blues on loan on Monday. So I thought, well, I've been told it's off. And then all of a sudden, a week down the line, it's back on. But what I heard is Blues were on a bit of a shitty run at the time. I think they'd been beat that weekend. And David Sullivan had said to Brucey, let's get him back sort of thing. So then I came back on loan and, you know, we ended up having a really good run and making the playoffs that season. So, you know, it was brilliant to get the chance to come back.
What season that must have been? Two years in one, wasn't it?
It was unbelievable because I think I came back as well. I think my first game, might be wrong, was Watford. I think we were like 4-0 up after an hour. And then they brought it back to 4-2 or 4-3, something mad like that. But we went on a mad run. I think we didn't lose or we won 12 out of the last 14, 15 games. Obviously sneaked into the playoffs and you know, the Millwall game. Home and away it was surreal, really. But it was great to get the chance to come back, and I tell you what, and it's a bit of a mad thing to say, it was brilliant to get the chance to leave on good terms as well. When I left a couple of years down the line, having been part of, you know, a brilliant era for the club.
Yeah. So where do you write that Wembley appearance for Blues against the Anglo-Italian?
Millennium.
Sorry, I do apologise.
No, listen, it's definitely probably the proudest moment of my career, playing in a game that meant so much and being fortunate enough to take one of the penalties and score. Well, you know, that'll go with me to my deathbed, and to see what it meant, not just to the fans, but to the players was amazing.
I remember saying to you when you played a bit for us at the Sedge, when I said, you took a penalty, I said, how does that compare to that one? You just went,
we played the over 35s, and there was a shootout. There was a little bit less pressure taking it for the over 34s than at the Millennium, mate. But listen,
the relief, you were so young as well, weren't you? Like, you was like young in kind of.
Don't drop him in, you weren't under 35, was
it? No, but about
at the Millennium.
In the Millennium, yeah. You look so like. I don't know. Was it the Blues fan in you that was nervous? Or was occasion?
Do you know what? The occasion was mad, and I think because, you know, we played.
So relieved.
We played extra time as well, and whenever I took penalties, and it's my pet hate today when I see people take penalties. These stupid run ups. So I always used to have a long run up, generate a bit. But I never placed it. I'd always hit it as hard as I could.
Blasted.
And my theory was, if I don't know where I'm putting it, the keeper don't know. And if it was a league match, you're never holding it. If you're trying to send him the wrong way, he's got a chance of holding it. If you blast it, you never hold it. And I was lucky, really. I think in my career, I took 20, 21 penalties, whatever, and I think I only missed one. So, you know, it worked for me. But I knew I was going to get cramp in my calves if I'd done my normal run-up. So I had to sort of shorten my run-up. I still managed to get a good strike on it and get it in the corner. But you're exactly right. The word that you said there, it was relief. It wasn't joy. It wasn't brilliant. It was like, thank God.
I can remember your face.
Your face,
and you're like,
Because the longest walk I've ever had is from the centre circle to that penalty spot. And all that's going through my mind is, if I miss this, I'm always going to be remembered as the Blues fan, the Brummie, that missed the penalty in the platform. I said, and if we don't go up, you're never coming back from that. So it was pure relief to get the goal.
Is that going through your head as you're walking then?
Yeah.
You're not clear.
You know, all these people say, get clear your head, do this and do that. It's like practicing penalties in training. It's pointless because you can't replicate the pressure. You can't replicate that you've just played 90 minutes. The adrenaline, the nerves, how tired you are. There's £150 million on the game. We haven't been in the Premier League for 16 years. You're taking it in front of the Blues fans. So the enormity of it...
That's all going through.
Now, if anyone can just cut... Now, listen, if you're Ronaldo or Messi, you're probably... Paul Devlin can't. So, yeah, all that's going through my mind is, oh, God, if I miss this. So all the negative thoughts are going through. But then, like, you get to it and like
but
I say...
the net then, you just
like... Yeah, like, I get there and I think, right, OK. And my process, I always had a run-up a little bit to the left. always had a decent run-up. 90% of my penalties went to my left, the keeper's right. It was the strike that beat them because I used to hit it with
across the ball instead of trying to open up.
And it was just right, okay, I know you're knackered, just concentrate on doing those things. And luckily enough, it went in. So it was relief.
What are your thoughts for when Carter put it in and the celebrations? And
do you know what? It probably couldn't have fell. And I seen him on this podcast saying the only one he worried about was me. I was the best penalty taker out of a lot of them. I haven't seen him yet. I'm going to have him about that. But no, it probably couldn't have fell to anyone better because I think Daz was 18 at the time. And probably a lot of the enormity of the occasion probably went over his head. But I was confident because we had some good penalty takers.
Yeah.
Brian Hughes still hasn't forgiven Daz to this day because he was the fifth penalty taker.
You wanted the...
wanted the glory.
Congratulations, didn't
he? But Stan, Stern, myself, Daz. And we did, you know. And like, I'll contradict myself a little bit. Every day for weeks leading up to that, at the end of every session, Brucey would get the five lads, get all the lads barracking in it, like, pick it up from the off-aisle and walk and take it. But I mean, it's not a patch on doing it for real. Yeah. But we had some good penalty takers, so I was pretty confident. But as confident as you can be in that sort of moment.
Obviously, the keeper plays a blinder as well. It's Vassam, isn't it?
Yeah, Nico. So yeah, brilliant. Mm-hmm.
That we're talking about that with the best teams that as well. How there was very little conversation. Like Vassam's name didn't really come up. Well, if he's the standard of keepers we've had here, isn't it?
I'm a Tony Cope.
Really good keeper.
You know, the best keeper I've seen down here is Tony Cope.
And a lunatic.
Oh, goalies are, aren't they? I haven't come across one that isn't. But you know, in the role that I've done down here for the last 9 years as club ambassador, it's been amazing for me because my era coming down was like Worthington, Harford, Tony Colton, Dennis Langan, Colin Todd, Archie Gemmell, all those sort of players, Broads, Joe Gallagher. So I've actually got to meet them and become friends with them and have a couple of beers with them. And it's...
Did you get a bit like, cool?
Yeah, it's nice. I remember coming down here. I'd only finished playing a couple of years and we used to have two ex-players in as guest of the day. And it was me and Frank Worthington. So I'm on the day having a beer with Frank Worthington, walking around the lounges, and you're in awe of him because he's the best player I've seen in a blue shirt, Frank Worthington. You do get stars for a lot. Big Mickey Harford, you know, legends, Noel Blake, Oppie. You know, these are all blokes that I've ended up pally with now and have a beer with. So it's surreal for me because when I meet him, I'm back to an eight-year-old fan. So, you know, it's been great.
And again, playing with the former Players Association as well. And Platinum played against them a couple of months ago, and just being on the pitch, and it's just mad, isn't it, that's a thing now. And
well, do you know what, we played, because we don't play many games, we probably only play the six or seven games a year for charity, the former Players Association, and we played up at next to Wash Hills the other week. So we always play against an over 35s because we've got lads in the late, I mean, I'm 54 next birthday, Dennis is like 60 odd, so we've got lads getting on a bit. And,
Wayne gets away. How old's Wayne?
Alcock.
Yeah, he's going to be 40s.
Yeah, he'd be late 40s. Yeah. But I looked at the team that we were playing, so they've all come out. Obviously, they're all over 35s and they're warming up and that. So we had like Roger Johnson, Craig Gardner, Daz Carter, Lee Carsley, Curtis Davis. I was playing, you know, we still get a really good turnout from the former players. And you could see this other team looking on, oh God, we're
smoking.
We're in for a chasing today. But it's the former players thing's brilliant to meet up with the lads. And you know, sometimes it's the only time you see some of the lads and you go in there and it's like being back in the change room, the piss taking and the jokes and everything.
Yeah.
You know, and we've raised a lot of money for charity down the year. So we're one of the last clubs that really does it properly. So again, you know, that's testament to Tom Ross, Kev Broadhurst and the club to keep that going. And the lads still want to come and turn out.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, because I imagine everyone's busy doing what they're doing. So it's nice to give back, isn't it? Because there's the turnout's great as well. And just kind of everyone around. And the newer, the kids and the younger generation as well. And getting told, oh, that's Devlin over there. And that.
Well, I forgot to say, well, Dukey played. So it was Dukey's debut for the... For the old boys, so we've got a strong team at the minute.
Still do a job in the.
I was going to say
one, wouldn't it?
Wouldn't be too bad in the league.
Yeah.
So, following on from the playoffs, then going up, first I think it was our first Premier League goal, wasn't it? Tell us about that Leeds goal.
First goal at St Andrews. Stern had scored away at Everton. I got sent off in a friendly up in Scotland pre-season. So I was, and the referee put it through. So I was suspended for the first three games of the Premier League season, which was Arsenal, Everton, and Blackburn. And fair play.
Is that how it works? Even with friendlies.
Well, they don't have to put them through. So he chose to put it through.
That's how you speak to him.
Well, yeah, I suppose so. I was never a fan of referees, so I probably said something I shouldn't have said to him when he brought the red card out. So, yeah, I was absolutely devastated. You know, I'd waited all those years. I was 30 odd to play in the Premier League, and I missed the first three games. And, you know, when you're out the team, you're saying, am I going to get back in? Are they going to do well? And, you know, so it was nice that we had Leeds down there, and Brucey put me straight back in. And Leeds had a good team. I think they got to the semi-finals of the Champions League that year. But, yeah, the goal, you know, I get asked about it loads, and it's, as you fellas will know, you work on a set piece in training. It might come off once in 50, and you might have to wait 20 games for it to come off, and it worked first time.
Because that ball that Grinder put into you, there was a bit of zip on that one. It sat up as you went to hit it.
It was Grinder, Sav and myself, and it just come off first time. But we could never use it again because people knew it. But yeah, you know, it was brilliant. Again, you know, well, I've just celebrated. Like, I didn't really know what to do because it was a bit surreal. And you think, well, hang on, I've just scored the first ever Premier League goal at St Andrews, which will never, ever, no one can ever take that away. So it was great. And then, you know, Jonty scored a worldie after it as well.
Yeah, you know, like prime Man City, wasn't it? Great. One touch, first time curling to the top corner.
You know, he's curled, I think that one goal of the season, but two really good goals.
A young Bowyer for them, wasn't it?
Bowyer scored, but obviously that was our first win, and it sort of triggered a really good season for us. Really good season. Yeah, you know, brilliant. We had a lot of lads that had played that were good Championship players, and in fairness to Bruce, he gave majority of us a chance in the top flight, and you know, I don't think we disgraced ourselves by any measure. So you know, it was culminating in the two Villa games, obviously was amazing, and then you get the people like Christophe coming in, you know, that nobody knew about, and all of a sudden you're training and you're playing with a World Cup winner, a European Championship winner, and you know, it was just amazing season. I think the one thing, if you look at the playoff team and the team probably the first year, maybe 2 years after that, as well as having some really good players, you had lads with a lot of that. You had grafters, you had lads that if you wanted to play, they'd play. If you wanted to have a scrap, they'd have a scrap. And I think we lost that as time went on with a couple of journeymen coming in with not really that bothered about playing.
Big money.
Big money,
So when was... when did you realise... I need to ask you about this one. Yeah. So the move to Watford.
Yeah.
Word is that Alton John personally put his hand in his pocket. to fund the move.
Yeah, I'm going to do that to you. Alton John put his hand in your pocket.
Yeah. I think it was the second season. I was 31, 32. I can't remember exactly how old, but there'd been a bit of interest. I wasn't playing every week. I was away with Scotland and West Ham rang me. Trevor Brooking had just took over as interim manager. They wanted to sign me, but it was before Pardew got the job. So they wanted to sign me initially on loan. And then when Pardew got the job, because Pardew had tried to sign me at Reading. And then obviously Ray Lewington had came in and wanted to take me full-time straight away. So, I had the chat with Bruce. I had 2 years left on my contract. And Steve said to me, so we're not going to play every week. That was it for me. That's all he needed to say. So I didn't want to be one of them that, I can look back and say, well, I played over 600 games. My biggest achievement, my biggest thing I'm proud of in my career, I was never out of contract, ever, in 15 years. So that meant somebody always wanted me. You know, I look at some of the people that have played down there that didn't play 50 games in years, that were happy to sit on the bench. That was never me. I wanted to play. So when Brucey said, you're not going to play every week, great. Okay, shook hands, brilliant. He said, you can stay, you know, you'll get...
And some people would have done.
Yeah, and some people would have done. Cause
Eddie Newton did, didn't they?
You know, it would have been easy. But, you know, 31, 32, time's running out. I want to be playing. So anyway, Karen wouldn't let me go to West Ham because she said, well, if you're going to go, we want you to go full-time. We don't want a loan deal or anything like that. So I ended up going to Watford with Ray Lewington. Elton John had said to Ray, look, because the club was skint. It was after the VR. A bit similar to when I went in at Chef U. Viali had gone in there, spent a load of dough. The club was skint. Clear the decks. Get some new players in.
Barry Fry.
Yeah, who can we get bargain basement? We get this lad from Blues. Elton John had said to Ray Lewington, I'll fund one deal. I'll pay the transfer fee and I'll pay his wages. So Ray Lewington, my friend, Elton John funded the whole thing.
He said, we'll get the stadium full again. We'll rock it, man.
Yeah, well, well, actually, he put a concert on as a fundraiser for him, and he gave me a shout out on stage. Right? So I'm sitting there with all the, you can imagine the stick I'm getting, can't you? But never met him, never got to meet him, anything like that.
So that's another one of your first and onlys in the career of in the highlights.
And you know what I will say, because you know Ray Lewington was top fella. You know, Elton was heavily involved in talking, not just about the club. He said he was not just one of these famous fans that, you know, he knew every player. He knew who was available. I was looking at him. He said he was a proper fan and proper invested in it. And he looked down the years. He's been chairman there and, you know, obviously funded different deals and that
sort of thing. Did he do a run and get an office over the training ground?
Can you imagine those serious board meetings where they're discussing transfer potential ins and outs, and he's sitting there in the big glasses and the boots, but talking really seriously about transfer business.
But no, it was great. You know, I ended up having 3 years down there. Great club, Watford. I was over the hill then, really, if I'm being honest. But I ended up playing 80-odd games for them. So, you know, it was good. And like I say, that's another thing, that a bit of a conversation piece to have.
I bet you can imagine,
can't you? You can imagine. I don't even have to say what I was getting stick about. But, you know, to say someone, world famous megastars, funded you to go and play football was brilliant.
Brilliant. So, just going back, just touching slightly about your combative side.
Mm-hmm.
Yellow, red card counts is up there. It was a different game.
I ran out of fingers when I was accumulating yellows and reds.
What did you put that down to? Was it your attitude? Was it your... just always kind of to the edge and kind of just going over the edge.
I mean, the first...
You were never like horrible about it. I don't remember you being a horrible player, but you was always...
Yeah, listen, I think again, probably a little bit of small man syndrome in there. I always remember, you know, when I went to Notts County, I don't know if you can remember, lads, years ago, I used to get so many points. So it'd be 2 points for a booking if you did that, 3 points for a booking if you did it, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. So when I saw him for Notts County, like in one of the reserve games, I got a booking, and Neil Warnock rang me. He's going, you've broke the record points in a season. Because obviously it all got put into the league then, but he didn't realise that I'd been booked to, I don't know how many times at Stafford Rangers, non-league. So they had to go to like a league thing. Hang on a minute. He's only signed for us for 2 minutes. That's his first booking with, you know, everything accumulating carried over. but like, so...
Didn't mention that in contracts. Like...
No, I thought I better...
Never came up. You never have.
Keep my mouth shut about that. But yeah, you know, I let myself down. I let myself down over the years, especially the first half of my career, disciplinary. The red mist had come down, you know, and like I said, I wasn't one of these wingers that didn't like the physical side of it. If you kick me, right, I'm kicking you back. And if you'd kick me one game and I didn't get you back, I'm waiting for the next game and I'm kicking you back. I always remember Wolves, funnily enough, my quickest ever sending off was 6 minutes at Molineux. And that was, of course, they had a lad called Mo Kamara left, and he'd done me there. So... I don't know whether I had to go off, and I don't know whether I got the chance to do him. But anyway, playing away at Molineux.
You're mindful of that.
I'm thinking, right, okay, first chance. And you never normally get the first chance in 6 or 7 minutes. And incidentally as well, it was my in-laws' first time they came to see me. So they're in the pub with my dad, who used to like a beer before the game. So they don't get in, you've already kicked off. And they were telling me, like, they're 5 minutes gone, 6 minutes gone. They're like going, excuse me. Sat down. He said, they've sat down, looked up, and I'm walking down the tunnel. Six minutes, the ball's been paid over to him. I thought, oh, here's my chance now. So I'm thinking, there's no way he's going to send me off after 6 minutes.
But what happens to the first one?
Well, the defender's got that, not the fourth.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So and he just went red card. But, yeah, you know, I didn't want to be one of those players that...
Did you get him properly, though?
Oh, yeah, done him. But I wouldn't want, you know, because I'm only 4'8" and I was about 10.5 stone, and I thought, well, I don't want to be one of those players that people can look at and think, right, we can physically... boot him out of the game. And, you know, I was quite quick, I was quite aggressive, quite direct. So it was just, and I think that sort of side of it, that edge, made me the player I was. I think if I'd have tried to take that away and maybe stand out with a few tackles or just calm it down, I don't think it would have made me the same player. I mean, listen, every manager I played for, they tore their hair out at times with some of it. You know, some of it was daft, some of it was stupid, ill-advised. But it just wasn't.
That's what they... signed you for, and that's what they liked as well. As much as they probably didn't like it if you did get sent off, they liked it that it was you seem like the kind of player that you'd get one and you'd be like, okay, time to go, kind of thing. That first challenge, then you're like, okay.
Well, you know, we talked earlier, you know, back in the day, defenders were allowed to clobber you once and the ref would say, right, you've had your one now. So you knew as a forward player, right, you're going to get smashed once and there's going to be no comeback for the defender. And like I said, you're playing against people like Stuart Pearce and people like that.
Snarly.
Yeah, they get you properly. So, yeah, I made my debut in 92. Physically, it's a far different game now to what it was then. You know, you look at the pitches and some of the tackles back then. And then I look back to the era when I watched down there in the 80s and that. Again, the 90s was different to that. I just think there's far less contact now, isn't there?
Yeah.
Every tackle seems to be a booking. But, you know, it is what it is. The game adapts, doesn't it? But the physical side of it, always quite enjoyed.
It is a shame, isn't it, that that's being phased out? Because that's as much part of football as tackling.
It's turned into a non-contact sport, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I've played in games, and you lads would have, and we've all watched games where the game's been crap. All of a sudden, a thunderous tackle, everyone gets going, and it sort of ups the game a notch, doesn't it? So I think, you know, there's been a look at some of the great tacklers. You know, Martin Granger, seeing Grimes go into a full-blooded tackle. You know, I think there is a place for those sort of players in the game, but then you look how the game's going. Maybe there won't be, or maybe there isn't now.
Mm.
And I think it's... Because tackling properly, that's a skill.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Tackling people properly and getting your timing right and winning the ball, you know, is a skill that's going out the game.
See, I just always think that when coaches say, if you've had to go to ground, you've already made your mistake, you haven't read. But I thought that was going to ground properly, timing a tackle, where you cover a couple of yards in wet conditions, win the ball, and take the player, maybe.
Yeah, so listen, we were always told, if you can take the ball and the player, take them. It's like when people are, you know, say, oh, I never had a manager that told me to deliberately to hurt someone. Every manager I applied for, if you get the chance to do him. Yeah. And, you know, that's not being controversial. If they had a really good player, you know, I'm on about fairly, not just run up and kick him. Every manager I applied for said, if you get the chance to tackle him and follow through and hurt him, you was told to do that.
Yeah, because half the players that are like that don't want to know after that, do they? They think, oh, I ain't going near him.
So, you know, you look now, how many times you see someone win the ball clearly now, but then the momentum, then they've smashed someone and took them out. Like years ago, as long as you got the ball first, anything else after that didn't matter.
Mm. I remember the penalty against Villa away. Mm. Johnson and Agbonlahor, wasn't it? And it was a good tackle, but he gave the penalty.
Won the ball.
That was the first time you it's changed.
Yeah.
Tackling has changed.
Yeah, I think obviously the physical side of the game gets less and less each season, and that's the way it looks like the powers that be want it. It always sort of makes me laugh when they go on about players from years ago. Could he play today?
Yeah.
I think a more relevant question is, could players today play years ago? Could you put... I think the great players could play in any era. Your Messi's, your Maradona's, your Besties, Ronaldo. They could play any era. It doesn't matter. But you stick a player who's playing regularly in the Premier League, a run-of-the-mill Premier League player now, put him back in the 70s, could he play then?
You know, assault, wasn't it? Most challenges were akin to assault.
Yeah, you're getting defenders that are like trying to half you into, like pitches that are ploughed field. So I think it was more difficult to play years ago than it is now.
Yeah.
I've seen some. So there was that slap the other day.
Yeah.
With the Everton, and it shows what showed one from I think the 70s or the 80s, and the keeper had come out, and the defender, what's it?
Yeah.
And the keeper just went to his own defender, and the refs come over like, come on, lads, and he was just done.
Yeah.
And that's just, you're just like, it's just a different world.
Well, I had something similar at Sheffield with Marcus Bent, and we'd had a bit of we're playing Lincoln in the FA Cup, and Benty had got a hat trick, and I think I'd set up a couple of his goals. So anyway, he's gone through to the byline. All he's got to do is tap it back to me for a tap-in, and he's tried to shoot. So we've ended up having a row, right? So we're in the Lincoln's box, pushing and pulling. They're down the other end. So he's grabbed me around the throat. I've grabbed me. Warnock's waved, dragged Benty off and left me on. And we've ended up having a big punch-up in the changing room after and this and that. So I've been through something similar like that. But
big old unit as well, Benty, wasn't
it? Yeah, it was a big lad.
You don't mind that, do you?
I remember going into the changing room. He's just come out the showers. He's like, stark bollock naked. I've got my boots on. And we've ended up having a roll around on the floor, having a fight. So again, Warnock was great.
He loved that, didn't I?
Brilliant. He just went, right, you in at 9 o'clock, you in at 9:15. So he had us both in the office, and he was just like, lads, what are you doing? You know, because Benty had done great for Sheffield. He got a big move to Blackburn at the end of that season. I was, at that time, I was player of the season. And he didn't fine us. He didn't, he just, like, lads grow up a little, like, banged our heads together.
Yeah.
And, like, I had a, I don't know, 18 months with Benty. Got on brilliant. We had, like, 30 seconds of madness. But that was where Warnock's man management was brilliant again. Other managers would have made a big thing about it. 2 weeks' wages and 2 weeks' wages for you. Yeah. Which said, I've got the hump with Benty. I've got the hump with the gaffer.
Yeah, you're carrying it on and on. It that's what I mean. Moyes is from the old school. And he said something similar in the interview, didn't he? I don't mind him having a fight.
Listen, you get flash points every day or every other day. In training. If you could see the way... You've been in changing rooms. If you could see the way lads talk to each other in changing rooms, the amount of times I've seen people having arguments, grabbing around the throat, training ground fight, it happens, you know. You're out there and you want to win, and like tensions are high. And it's just part, as long as you don't take it on and bear a grudge and it's something that's happening all the time, you know, there's no issue with it.
The Dyer Bowyer thing when I remember the Souness interview, and they were interviewing, and they're just standing behind, like, for ages. Just remember that one, the shaking hands awkwardly. And it's just like, oh, it's just. But it's competitive, and like saying, Moyes from the old school, just like, I don't mind it if it's for the good of the team, and we'll sort it out indoors. Because there's that many cameras.
Have you ever been in changing rooms then where it's the opposite, where you're sitting there with players that look like they couldn't care less?
Oh, like, as many times as I have the other time. You know, I remember going to I'm not going to name names, but I remember it at Sheffield, I remember it here. Not so much Notts County, I remember it at Watford. You'd have lads that were comfortable, maybe come in on good contracts. You know, most lads and myself, you'd play, you kid yourself on that if you've had a knock or a strain. No, I'm all right, I'm all right. Deep down, you know you're not all right. You want. There was other lads, if they had a scratch, they wouldn't play. They weren't really bothered about if the team won, lost or draw, they were getting paid. So you get a lot of that as well. I think less so with the homegrown lads. Our sort of attitude was, we'll play through a brick wall, we'll play through the prime barrier. Used to play with a lot of the foreign lads who, that's not right yet. That's not right. I'll leave it another fortnight. So, yeah, you get both extremes, really.
What was you like in the changing room? Was you vocal in the changing room? Or was you just... Or was you...
No, yeah.
Depend where you was?
Yeah, pretty vocal. Pretty vocal. Like to laugh and a joke. I wasn't...
You kind of... Oh, come on, lads.
I wasn't a shrinking violet. Looking back now, I probably should have kept my gob shut more than I did. But, yeah, I'd have my say. But I think that's part and parcel of my character.
Just touching on internationals...
Mm-hmm.
Scotland, obviously, you've got a number of caps for them. Was there any temptation for England?
No, I was never linked with England. I'd been linked with the Republic of Ireland in my first spell here, but FIFA changed the rules that you couldn't go back as far as your great grandparents. Right. My great grandparents were from Ireland, so Mick McCarthy rang me the week before he announced his first squad. When he'd gone, I think he'd gone from Millwall to the Republic job, and I would have been in his first squad, but obviously I couldn't qualify. Down the years, there was rumours about Scotland on a few occasions, and obviously I think the catalyst for me was getting to the Premier League, because I wasn't playing any better than I had done the previous 10 years for Sheffield or my first spell here. But because I was playing in the Premier League, I think that, so again, came late to me, like turning pro at 19, Premier League at 30, first cap at 30, everything came, probably a little bit too late, really.
You're like the antithesis to this whole development programme now, aren't you, where the kid falls out at the moment, he's rolled straight into an academy and...
Mate, listen, the amount of discussions we have this now about getting kids in at 8 and 9, 99% of them released at 15, 16, it's too young. And how can you tell anyone at 15, 16, you're not good enough? Oh, I remember being at school, senior school, and like I say, we only had a team for a couple of years. You'd have the lads that stood out and more. Invariably, they were the lads that were 6 foot at 12 and 13 and just used to... By the time 18, 19, you catch up with them.
Yeah.
I think we're getting kids far too young. Far too young, putting too much pressure on them. And also, you're getting kids at 8 and 9, think they're going to be players. They toss off school, they toss off the learning, they don't play with their mates. And then all of a sudden at 15, yeah, thanks, but no thanks. And I don't know what the statistics are on it. When I was a kid, it was a youth team. You keep the two best players out of the youth team. Watch this, lads. That's how it was when I first signed for Notts County. So you'd have two out of the group of 16, 18 that'd make it. I'd love to see, with all the money, all the investment, the infrastructure now that's in all these academies, the actual success rate and numbers, how much higher it is than when they just kept two best players out of youth team. I'd love to. I don't know whether...
I don't think it's far off, is it?
Well, that could be miles more. It could be the same. It could be less. I don't know. But when you look at... I mean, we celebrate all these academies and everything now, and there's still 90% don't make it. So what other industry would celebrate a 90% failure rate? Now, I know, obviously, football's its own sort of thing, but I just think you've got to let kids enjoy the football. You've got to let them develop. Again, we spoke about non-league earlier on. From 16, 17, I was playing against blokes. I wasn't playing against another 16-year-old or another 17-year-old. You know, I said, go to Altrincham on a cold Tuesday night where you're playing against a 35-year-old who's been around the block, maybe played 100 games for Blackpool, who's going to elbow you, who's going to boot you. You have to grow up quickly. I've seen brilliant kids playing against kids their own age. Go and stick them in a team where they're playing against men, grown men, and they fall down, you know. So yeah. I'm not the greatest fan of academy setups, as you can probably tell.
But the thing is, because it is such a financially beneficial thing now with PSR, you get a Grealish or you get a Bellingham and take the emotion out of it, and it doesn't matter what happened with those kids, does it? Because you just put
them... Well, I think that's the thing, but how often, I mean, the generational, no, the likes of Jude, Rooney, they don't come along very often, do they? But for one of them, every generation probably pays for the rest of the academy. Mm. I mean, listen, I'm not saying that they haven't got a place. You know, some clubs have been the academies totally. I think Brentford did it, didn't they, for a spell? Yeah. They've been the academy. I just think I'm not a fan of getting kids at 8 and 9. Let them enjoy it. Let them develop. And again, you're releasing kids at 15. A lot of it's down to physically how big and strong they are as well. Don't let anyone tell you, no, we only look at this and that. If you've got two good players, one of them's 6'2", 90% of clubs take the 6'2" one, right? But again, at 15, by the time they're 20, the little one could have caught up. He might be a bit quicker. The bigger one might have put weight on and he's not as mobile. So, you know, I was glad I went through the non-league route, if I'm being... I wouldn't change it.
Well, mate, Jose, I was saying, he couldn't get in the teams in master teams in Portugal, and he comes to England, and they're like, "That's exactly what we're looking for and stuff." Yeah. So it's, but if that was the mentality, the likes of yourself and Jose and some of the players that aren't 6'4" or whatever, would get overlooked, wouldn't they? And
it's the best Barcelona team ever, wasn't it?
Yeah.
They're all 5'7", 5'8", and.
I think we were obsessed, weren't we, for a period. I don't think it's as bad now, but we were obsessed with having big, tall athletes, box-to-box athletes, you know, for a long time. And I think in that era, we got left behind by teams on the continent, who, again, you look, Xavi, Iniesta, people like technique players. And I think that's why we didn't have a lot of success in Europe for a long time. It has changed, but you still go and watch a youth team game and look at the size of some of these kids. You know, that some of them, it's like a team of doormen, some of them.
You could say, Todd, turn down here with check and door.
Yeah. The wardrobe.
Yeah, mate. The myth was broken.
Yeah.
Right, so from deciding to hang up your boots, how hard was that and how easy was it to go into coaching?
Yeah, I was relatively injury-free, and I only ever had one operation when I was about 32. But I was struggling bad. I had an operation on my foot and I was in a lot of pain.
How old was you then?
About 33, and I was coming to the end of my contract at Watford, and I had a couple of offers from Gillingham and MK Dons, you know, a good deal, 3-year deals at that age, but I was desperate to get back to the Midlands. Warsaw come in for me. Ken Broadhurst, funnily enough, well, it was Merce that signed me, and then Merce went and Ken Broadhurst got the job. But I went there, you know, the club was in disarray, really. It was just a team full of lone players, you know. Having come from Watford, where it was a good club, you know, good facilities, stuff like that. Warsaw were training on a park and everything was done on a shoot. And I wasn't enjoying it. I was in a bit of pain with my foot. And I remember it was the day before my 34th birthday and we were playing Bournemouth, I think. And I went to see Broads. I said, I'm jacking in after today. Because I had to the end of the season. And I turned down 3 years at MK Dons, 3 years at Gillingham to get back to the Midlands. And looking back, I probably should have played longer now, but I didn't want to be one of those that just played for the sake of playing. And I wanted to enjoy it. I've made a couple of investments that I thought, oh, I don't really have to keep, or that since then went completely tits up. So yeah, it was a difficult decision because that, you know, it was all I'd known for 14, 15 years. And it's the best life in the world, being a footballer. Went into coaching, nothing in the professional game, just coaching kids throughout the Midlands, did 15 years doing that. It was great, but, you know, I don't think you ever get over not playing. Even today, I'll try and have a game now and again when I can for the over-35s or the All-Stars. Miss playing every day, which, you know, I speak to Jeff Horsfield, Tater, they don't miss playing in the slightest. I miss it every day. And that's why you see a lot of ex-players struggle post-football, you know, with different addiction issues and, you know.
Trying to chase that high.
Yeah, how do you ever replicate scoring a goal in front of 28,000 outside there, everyone singing your name. To all of a sudden, 10 years down the line, nobody knows you, nobody recognises you, and you're doing a job. You know, it's
mad, isn't it?
It's hard to replicate that high, and I think a lot of players do struggle. Again, that's why I'm happy I came from my non-league background, because I'd seen both sides. I'd gone out to Graft playing non-league, and you get lads that have been in the academy setup that go straight to pro. Then all of a sudden at 35, right, you've had 20, all your adult life doing this now, you finish, go and earn a few quid. Because not every, listen, the Premier League boys don't have to work again. I would imagine that nowadays a lot of the Championship lads don't have to work again. But in my era, only a tiny percentage come out the game with enough to go, right, that's it, I'm not doing anything.
Yeah.
Everyone else has to go back to Graft.
I mean, obviously, it was the money was good then, but you'd just before, yeah, probably boom, boom, wasn't it? Yeah, probably just 5 years before maybe. And
probably, yeah. Probably, but so it's difficult for you. You get someone that's been cocooned in the football system all their life, probably got no academic qualification.
Everything's done for you. Be there at that time.
So all of a sudden, right, okay, you guys still pay your mortgage, you've got to pay your bills, go and earn yourself 400 or 500 quid a week. I think it's really difficult for lads. But footballers don't get a lot of sympathy because everyone thinks they're on 100 grand a week and got 1 million quid in the bank. But, you know, a lot of lads struggle, more than people know.
And is there not the PFAs and not things in place that kind of facilitate that to look after people?
They say there is. Listen, if you're Gazza or Tony Adams or people like that, they'll fall over themselves to help you. If you've played 10 years at Torquay or Lincoln and that, are they really going to fall over themselves to help you? I don't know. Most players I speak to don't get a great deal of help, if I'm being honest. I watched a thing with Lee Hendry the other day, and he was on about, you know, when he had his problems with depression and tried to take his own life. Said he got zero help from the PFA. And Lee was quite high profile, wasn't he?
Yeah.
It's criminal, isn't it?
Well, then you hear about the financial mismanagement going on at the top and the controversies around that.
Yeah.
I think the interests clearly aren't with the players, are they?
Well, it's like I needed a hip replacement 2 years ago. And it's obviously down to wear and tear playing football. Rang the PFA. No, you don't meet the criteria. Well, what's the criteria? I can't walk. I'm struggling with the hip. But then you look at other players, higher profile players. 25
years in the league.
Yeah. Yeah.
You literally played most of your career in the football league.
But so I said, well, what is the criteria? What is the criteria? And no one could explain what it is. Now, to me, because when you're in the PFA, you don't get a choice to opt out. You are in the PFA, you pay your subs every month.
Yeah.
My subs would have been the same as Gazza's subs or the same as someone at Northampton. So we're all paying the same in. But I know, if I was to smash my knee up, or Gazza was to smash his knee up, or the kid at Northampton, who the PFA falling over themselves to help? You know, and don't get me wrong, they do some really good things with regards training and that, and access to courses. But, you know, help needs to be across the board for footballers, not just the high-profile ones that have played at the top level that are household names.
Especially mental health and stuff.
Yeah, mate, you know, without a doubt. You know, nobody talks about the lads in the first and the second division. You know, you have someone who's played in the second division for 10, 15, 20 years. His knee could be knackered, his ankle, he won't have the money to go and get that sorted out private. He'll be having to work again. And, you know, so I think it needs to be a more widespread approach, really, with stuff like that. I mean, I don't really know. You know, I don't have a great deal to do with the PFA anyway.
Well, Tatey said it when he was going through his problems at the... There's a bit there, but once you go delving, then that's kind of it. We've dealt with that inquiry, but...
Yeah.
It's all well and good, isn't it? Access to course and things like it. Lip service, isn't it? Yeah, look, yeah, that's there. There's the website. Tick the box saying, told them that. I need help with this.
Yeah.
And then that help's not there.
And I don't know if it's still the same now, but I know for a long time they were the richest union in the world. So it's not like they're struggling for
money. Imagine how many players and they're taking that much off.
Yeah, and I just want to know how they judge and how they deem, right, okay, we'll fund his knee operation. We won't fund his. Because no one could tell me how they decide to do that.
Mad. Cool. So just wrap it up then. So, high points in your career. What really, really stands out for you? And and how do you want the Blues fans to kind of remember you as? Do you know what I mean?
Oh, listen. Just somebody that give 100%, really. And I know I was never the greatest player in the world, but I think, and not just the Blues fans, I think the reason why I got on well with the fans at every club I was that I always tried. I think fans, I know for me as a fan, you forgive players for having a crap game or whatever, but you don't forgive them for not trying. So I think I always tried. So, you know, that I think I did quite well down there. Like I said earlier on, I've got a few things that I can be really proud of that I achieved there. So yeah, just somebody that tried, somebody that gave their all. You know, it was from being a kid out there watching to go out there and play was amazing. And like I said at the start, it was something that I never thought I'd do. So you know, I can't moan. It's like we touched on earlier about the money wasn't as good. I wouldn't have changed it for a world. I loved my 14, 15 years playing. I loved every minute of it. There were some difficult times in it, yeah, but I look back now and, you know, I think I played 600 and something games, first team games. I scored 100 goals. I played in the Premier League and I got an international cap. So for a 5'8" short ass from Erdington, didn't do too bad.
Any last words for Elton John?
No. no, listen. It is a bit of a conversation piece, that. But again, thanks, Elton.
Well, thank you, mate. It's an absolute pleasure. Great. Thank you.
No worries.
Cheers, mate.